We've got the document retention and destruction policy, something really not only every charity should have, but every business should have. And then to Jeff's point about there may be something for accreditation or there may be something in the hospital, even the 990 asks about some what I call if-then policies. If you have chapters or affiliates, do you have a chapter or affiliate policy? If you engage in joint ventures, do you have a joint venture policy? Do you have a policy on executive compensation? Executive compensation doesn't exactly ask about policy. It says, do you have a process? It's effectively the same question. So there are a number, there are these policies asked about on the 990, but clearly these are not the only policies that exist out there. And everyone in this room is going to have different policies because all of your activities are different. You may have one organization that needs to have policies for how volunteers work with children. You may have another organization that needs to have policies around grants that are being made internationally. So you've got a whole slew of things that may need policies. We're going to talk a little bit about the basic ones, but hopefully in the context of how do you identify what policies you need? And once you've identified it, how do you go about crafting a policy? Now, the easy solution is you go to your computer and you type in Google and you type in the name of the policy. And I'll tell you, there's some, you know, it's always great to see what other people are doing. And there's some good information out there. But there's always going to be a starting point of what are we looking to do? So a conflict of interest policy is a good example of that. We've put a couple of things on this slide, and hopefully you all have this in your materials, of what is the reason that we have a conflict of interest policy. And I tend to think this is the beginning point of any policy. What are we trying to accomplish? What's the reason we need a policy around this? What conduct are we trying to mandate or encourage? What conduct are we trying to prohibit? Here, with a conflict of interest policy, we are trying to encourage compliance with the duty of care and with the duty of loyalty. We want people that are making decisions on behalf of the organization to put the organization first, to make decisions they believe are in the best interest of the organization, and to use their best judgment in doing that. So this is not required by federal law unless you're a hospital. Some states require it. Texas does not. Texas does, however, have a provision in the Business Organizations Code that somewhat tracks it and provides that if you follow this process, then we're not going to place the burden of proof on the fiduciary effectively. So the
Texas one in particular, Darren, so the statute basically says that if the, all the material facts are known by the board and it's determined that whatever the transaction is, it's determined to be fair to the organization, and even if there is a conflict of interest with that particular board member, right, it's not necessarily best practices, but whatever that transaction is, isn't necessarily voidable, correct?
That's right.
And that person also can be counted towards a quorum for the vote and can actually vote on the matter. So that's, I guess, the low bar standard in terms of you'll comply with state law if you follow minimally that. Now, whether that's best practices or not is another story. But there can be situations, I think the slides touch on it a little bit later on, there can be situations where that low bar is really the bar that you have to just adhere to because you might have a transaction between related organizations where maybe there really aren't any disinterested directors, right? And I've actually had that.
It has to be fully disclosed.
It has to be fully disclosed. Like, again, I had one recently where we had two different foundations, but the boards were entirely the same. One was a grant-making foundation, one was an operating foundation. So the boilerplate conflicts of interest policy would have prohibited anything from really anyone taking any action. So we had to go back in after the fact and sort of clean it up a little bit. So sometimes that low bar standard is the only thing you can do, because there really is no other option when the board members are the same. You really can't delegate the responsibility to a non-board member.
Right. A family foundation is a great example of this. You've got all family members. How do you deal with something? Obviously, you can't be self-dealing, but there still could be a conflict of interest type issue that you have to deal with. Again, there is that bottom line bar of full disclosure, fairness to the organization, but we're generally trying to go a little above that. If you know, how many of you have a conflict of interest policy that allows the conflicted person to participate in the discussion about the transaction? I see a couple of hands. Tell me about that.
Ours, they can participate in the discussion, but they can't vote.
Okay.
And they have to, and we also have to note that in the minutes that they've abstained because of this.
Do they recuse themselves and leave the meeting for discussions outside their presence?
Yes.